Thank you again, everyone, for joining us for today's Primary Care Analytics Team Cyber Seminar. Today's session is CAN 3.0, Updating and Improving VA's Hospitalization and Mortality Risk Prediction Score. I would like to take a moment and introduce our presenters. Today's first presenter is Craig Kreisler. He's with the Program Evaluation and Resource Team, the Office of Mental Health. He is joined by Dr. Anne Marie Rosland. She's a core investigator with the VA Pittsburgh Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion, director with the VA Primary Care Analytic Team High Risk Core, and director at University of Pittsburgh Caring for Complex Chronic Conditions Research Center. Craig, can I turn things over to you?
Yes, Heidi, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Good afternoon and good morning to those not on the East Coast. Dr. Rosland and I are happy to present today on CAN and specifically some improvements in the new algorithm that we recently released, CAN 3.0. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into it. So some basic objectives for the call today. Provide first an overview of CAN history, and then we'll get into some of the updates that we've worked on as part of CAN 3.0 and that release. And then we'll get into how developers and report builders within VA can access CAN 3.0. And then Dr. Rosland will talk more from a clinician's perspective about clinical access and some use cases. First off, wanted to have an acknowledgement page and thank you for everyone that's sort of been involved in this process. It's honestly been a long effort. I think we started this in 2021 to at least get to this point. So our main sponsors for this updated algorithm are the Office of Primary Care, with our main points of contact being Dr. Scott Polakowski and Dr. Rosland as well. And this work has been performed in the Office of Performance Integration, Analytics and Performance Integration, which was previously headed by Dr. Francis, who recently retired, and Dr. Tammy Box is acting executive director at this point. The development work mostly was performed by the CART program, so the Clinical Application Reporting and Tracking Program, and that's one of the clinical offices within Analytics and Performance Integration. So I wanted to thank Dr. Meg Plamondon, Dr. Steve Waldo, our supervisors, Tracy Smith and Tom LaFontaine, our consulting statistician, Anna Barone, Dr. Anna Barone, and then the developers, which were primarily William Green, myself, Trang Lance, and Rebecca Pagari. And we've also had a number of partners and collaborators throughout this process. Many more, I realized this morning when I looked at the slide, I started remembering others that were involved and we've had conversations with that I didn't include, unfortunately, in the slide. But from there's a research team that's led by Dr. Amal Navathi and Ravi Parikh, who is looking at bias in algorithms, and CAN is one of those algorithms. We've also had a number of interactions with other VHA offices, including Integrated Veterans Care, Women's Health, and Health Equity. Also, my current office, Program Evaluation and Resource Center, and the Office of Mental Health. And then also, it was obviously a big effort to be able to get this into production and be able to share the CAN data with across VA, I should say. So I really wanted to call out and thank the SAS and Linux admins and the CDW project support staff. And those are headed by Kevin Martin and Mark Ezzo and James Bolton, Hans Nielsen and Phoebe Wong. A lot of collaboration with those offices to actually get this in operations, which was a big task. John Wallace from the VSSC has helped on a monitoring dashboard that we'll touch on later that we think is a very nice tool that will be used for monitoring performance of CAN 3.0 moving forward. And then various folks from Vinci that I think they've moved on at this point, but Dr. Christine Lynch and Elise Gatsby helped early on in the process with some of the conceptualization of the project. And then a few doctors, Dr. Melissa Wee, Karen Daniels, Kevin Josie, and Portia Cornell have also provided significant input. So in terms of, you know, a primer or an overview of CAN. So, you know, at its core, CAN is a set of statistical models that aim to risk stratify veterans based on their likelihood of near-term hospitalization or mortality. It's meant to be sort of an objective measure of risk. And in practice, what, you know, most clinicians and what most everyone sees in the dashboards and reports and tools and things like that is something called the CAN score. And really what the CAN score is, it's essentially just a percentile ranking for a veteran against the entire population that was scored for the model. So the output of the statistical models are estimated probabilities of these adverse events, and the CAN score is just turning in that estimated probability into a percentile ranking. So it's hopefully easier to consume for users. CAN has been in VA operations since at least 2012. It's taken on a few different iterations, but it's well over, I guess, 12 years at this point. And initially the use case for CAN was really when the patient-aligned care team started to form. I think that was around 2009 or 2010 for primary care, where they have this team-based model for caring for a set of patients. And this was really meant to be a score that could help clinicians with ranking their or sorting their lists based on maybe upcoming appointments and, you know, high CAN scores or high likelihood of these outcomes. As I had mentioned, it's been in operation since 2012, and it's actually taken on a few different iterations. So there's been three major versions, CAN 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0, and that also sort of a recalibration, which was CAN 2.5. So currently we're moving to CAN 3.0. This was released for developers to start to include and replace CAN 2.5 in their reports and dashboards and the like about a month ago. And we plan to keep both CAN 3.0 and 2.5 in production simultaneously through the end of this fiscal quarter. So then in FY25 quarter one, we will deprecate CAN 2.5 and 3.0 will be the standard moving forward. I just wanted to reiterate on this slide the difference between the dashed line and the solid line. So the solid line is these scores were used in operations or available in operations at that point. The dashed line signifies that we went back and created, you know, a retrospective history based on that implementation of the algorithm for older risk dates. So for CAN 3.0, we went back and generated scores to the beginning of 2023. And this next slide is just kind of some information on changes in model characteristics by these versions. The most prominent ones that I'll point out for CAN 3.0 is the updating of our cohort of who is included to get a CAN score calculated. All previous versions, 2.5 and prior, it was based on the primary care veteran population. So any veteran that was on a primary care team within the VA, they should, or they had the ability to receive a CAN score. And now for 3.0, mostly because of changing laws and the way veterans are able to interact with the health system, we wanted to update that to hopefully be more inclusive of veterans that are actually using VA healthcare services. So this definition is more based on all those that are enrolled in healthcare services and are quote unquote active. So active is defined by having at least one patient-provider interaction with VA in the last 2 years. And that provider or that interaction, so to speak, could be either an in-house, you know, in VHA facility interaction, or it can be via integrated veteran care paid for, you know, community care by VA. The other main thing I want to point out on this slide is that for 3.0, we're reducing the number of models that we produce. So 2.5, there was 6 distinct models. And now for CAN 3.0, we're producing 2 distinct models, a 90-day hospitalization model and a 90-day death model. So the general goals of this project has been, you know, first and foremost, to ensure the models are as accurate and fair and equitable as possible for our veterans, for the veterans that we serve. And then sort of the secondary goals are really expanding, and really they relate to the first one, but expanding that cohort to include any veteran that is actively using VA healthcare. And the third one is to make better use of the data sources that we have available in VA operations. So this is both in terms of sort of translating concepts across, you know, now VA has 2 EHR implementations between Vista CPRS and Oracle Health Millennium. So translating concepts across those sort of boundaries, if you will. And then also, you know, a big part of VA care is community care. So we needed to be able to try to translate these definitions as well as we can across those sources as well. So as I mentioned in a previous slide, for CAN 3.0, we're simplifying our products. We are only producing 2 models going forward, and they're the single outcome model. So it's risk of 90-day hospitalization and it's risk of 90-day mortality. We have done away with the composite model, so the hospitalization or death model, and we've also done away with the one-year version of these models. You know, and there's some main reasons why we decided to move forward in this way. For one, at least with the combined outcome models, we've had a lot of input, like I mentioned before on the partner slide, from a group out of the University of Pennsylvania that are funded researchers looking at fairness and equity. So we've taken some of their input and incorporated it into this release. So part of the rationale for removing those models is equity and fairness based. And then also, you know, just pure statistical considerations. Hospitalization and mortality, they really have different primary drivers. Mortality is more age and comorbidity based, where hospitalization more is, you know, age and comorbidity still play a role for sure, but really it's a lot of it is utilization and access based. So past utilization really predicts future utilization as well. In terms of, you know, singling out the 90-day outcome for the one-year outcome, our main stakeholder, the Office of Primary Care, they helped us identify that they think the most actionable model is that 90-day hospitalization model for most of the use cases that they see fit. And lastly, we feel like having fewer models should promote more consistent use throughout the enterprise. And it may reduce potential confusion on what model is in use in, you know, this product or another product and so on and so forth. So we had seen some examples in the past where maybe like the composite model was being utilized in a metric or a report where probably a more optimal choice would have been to use like the mortality model, let's say. So this slide kind of gives some indications or one of our rationale for removing the composite model. So this is a slide that we got the help from the bias team out of UPenn from Dr. Saewon Park. So this is looking at CAN score distributions. This is 2.5 by race and, you know, by model. So on the left-hand side is for Black or African-American race, and on the right-hand side is white race. And really what we see here is for Black or African-Americans, really that veteran population on average is a lot younger than VA, and or sorry, than white veterans. And they do tend to be a little bit sicker as well. For the mortality score, you can see that their CAN score distribution is more geared towards the lower scores, but their hospitalization CAN scores are more, you know, more fall within that higher CAN score range. And then the reverse is true for white veterans, where they tend to be older. So their mortality scores are a little bit higher on average, and they're a little less likely to be hospitalized, at least in VA or that we know about within VA. So their CAN scores are a little bit skewed to the left, or they're a little higher on the lower distribution. And really what we see happening with the composite model is sort of a leveling off, so to speak, of both of those things, where there's that interplay between mortality and hospitalization, where we just feel moving forward, having these single outcome models makes more sense, because the composite model may muddy sort of the interpretation and what we're trying to get at. And that may, you know, impact, you know, how you want to interpret the score or help it drive, you know, things like resource allocation or what programs to recommend, things like that. So in terms of CAN 3.0 development for our cohort, we used 2022 data. Essentially, we chose 4 index states throughout the year. And for each of those index states, we have we pulled all veterans that were enrolled in healthcare services, VHA healthcare services, and had that at least one encounter in the prior 2 years. And then what we did from there is we took a repeated cross-sectional approach to designing our final data set that would be used for model training and testing. So for those 4 index states, there's a lot of overlap between the panels, right? For each index state, a lot of veterans are in all 4 multiples of those. So what we decided to do was take sort of a roughly 25% sample from each index state, so sample without replacement, so that we came up with a final cohort of around 6 million distinct veterans that made up our final cohort for model training and testing. And then the algorithm that we've implemented, it's a logistic regression algorithm, but we've also included we also wanted to make sure that we recognize that the outcomes that we're modeling with mortality and hospitalization are semi-competing risks. So if a veteran dies within that 90-day prediction period, they are not able to contribute the full 90 days to the hospitalization outcome. So we use some inverse probability censored weighting scheme for the hospitalization model. And for that hospitalization model, we, from our training cohort, we excluded veterans that died during the prediction period. And then we weighted based on the inverse probability of mortality, essentially, for the rest of the veterans to make up for those veterans that died. And you can see on the right there, the graph that kind of just displays the seasonality in deaths specifically. So that was one of the main reasons we wanted to make sure that we try to include veterans from different points during the years because of that seasonality in deaths. And we also saw some seasonality as well in hospitalization. So we took that into account. So this is kind of just a table one of what our modeling cohort looks like. You kind of see here that couple things I'll highlight, the difference between 90-day mortality for the different subgroups, so specifically white and Black or African-American race, where we see white veterans are more likely to pass away than Black or African-American, and then sort of the reverse is true for 90-day hospitalization, where we see a higher share of Black or African American veterans hospitalized versus white veterans. So in terms of predictive power and how we're doing with CAN 3.0 compared to CAN 2.5. So these cohorts are slightly different now, right? We're including more veterans now with CAN 3.0 versus 2.5, but these are just some of the raw statistics on, for the CAN 2.5 cohort in terms of area under the curve, both the ROC AUC and precision recall area under the curve. How are we doing or how are we comparing? So, sort of across the board, we are slightly improving with CAN 3.0 in this prediction power metric. And we've also seemed to close the gap a bit. Specifically, I'm looking at sex at birth between males and females and the hospitalization model. We are doing a bit better there to close that gap as well. These next few slides here are more calibration. So how well what we say the probability, estimated probability is for a veteran, how well does that stack up to what we actually see observed in the data after the fact? So for calibration, this is 90-day mortality comparing 3.0 and 2.5 for a similar time period. We see similar trends here. Maybe a little bit better with 3.0 with calibration and those high 90 scores for CAN. And then this is calibration just broken out by race, where again, I think we see a little bit closer groupings of calibration between the white and Black or African American subgroups as well. And then these are for the hospitalization models. So I think you can really see a distinct sort of difference here where in CAN 2.5 in 2022, you can kind of see where we're somewhat under predicting on average for the entire cohort. And we've sort of on the left-hand side getting back to more agreement between what is expected versus what is observed. And then similarly with, the breakout by race for hospitalization, we see more overlap between white and Black or African-American race now versus what we see with CAN 2.5 in December. So that's promising that we're getting back to similar calibration patterns for both of those. This slide here is more of just, some raw sort of numbers to give a sense of what different cut points may mean if you're using CAN in a research study or you're using CAN in an operational sort of capacity. So if you look at CAN scores of 99 or higher, for the mortality model, we're talking about on average, 15% of those veterans will die in that period. And then the hospitalization rate is somewhere around, 36%. And then sort of as you go down the list here, so 99, 95, you see that rate, so this would be like 90, if you're looking at a point of CAN score of 95 and above, that would include like the 99th percentile as well. So that's what I mean by cut points. If you were to say, I'm going to look at all veterans 99 and above or 95 and above. But this, I think, just gives a sense of sort of what to expect for how often the veterans within those CAN score groupings will experience the outcome. And then, putting that against, what does that mean in terms of your entire sample size, right? If you look at the 90th percentile, right, we are talking about a hospitalization rate of 17-ish percent, but the top 10% of CAN scores right now is roughly equivalent to 640,000 veterans, since we're seeing, with our cohort at this point, around 6.4 million veterans that are enrolled and active by our definition. So this is just a basic slide of sort of the co-grants that we are including in these models. There's more detail in the CAN primer that is linked down in the right-hand corner. Just a few things I wanted to note here. With our healthcare utilization variables, we really try to define these to be able to be translatable, again, across like the EHRs and also across different sources, so claims from integrated veteran care as well. So things like acute care or acute days of care, which would be the number of days a veteran was in the hospital or at an ER. Those are things that we can, you know, pretty reliably measure across all of those sources. And similar with our visit days of care concept. These are just essentially the number of days where a veteran had like a patient provider encounter or interaction. For that variable, we do have separate variables for in-house versus IVC. The other thing I'll point out here is that for medical conditions, in previous versions of the model, we had our main comorbidity measure was the Charlson-Deo score, but we've updated that for CAN 3.0 to use what is known as the multimorbidity weighted index. And that was through some collaborations that we've had with Dr. Melissa Wee from UCLA and the Los Angeles VA. So MWI, it's we found it, we think it's more of a comprehensive comorbidity measure than Charlson. Charlson, you know, only considers, you know, I can't remember how many different conditions. I think it's somewhere between 10 and 15, but MWI considers 91 conditions. Its weights are based on a different outcome than Charlson-Deo. It's based on physical functioning. So we thought that is especially more useful in the context of hospitalization. And what we kind of saw in some of our analysis is that this comorbidity measure performed similarly head-to-head as Charlson did for these outcomes. And then it slightly was a slight improvement over Charlson for the hospitalization outcome. This slide we wanted to really include because personally I've gotten a few different questions from clinicians across VA on, you know, it sort of maybe at a VISN level, you know, VISN leadership is looking at CAN scores and seeing how they're divvied up, you know, by different teams for different facilities. And, you know, those profiles for patients at a, you know, a rural facility maybe in New Hampshire are different than something like, you know, downtown Boston. So one thing we are seeing is with CAN 2.5, we weren't doing a great job of including the IVC claims data in the covariates. So that was being noticed across the enterprise in various more rural places. But because they are referring out for care a lot more at, you know, more rural places, then maybe their CAN scores weren't as accurate as they could be if we started to better include the claims data from IVC. So this graphic is just meant to represent and meant to shed light into what are our data sources for these covariates that we're including in the model. So all of the different categories use the, you know, VA, EHR, and administrative health records. So, you know, CDW work we're using to get, you know, the CPRS VISTA type data and administrative data. And then we're using the PERC ShareMail data for Oracle Health, which are curated data sets from essentially CDW work too, or sourced from the Oracle Health EHR. And then for the claims, integrated veteran claims data, we're using the IVC CDS consolidated data sets that are now available, which are, they're just great. They're awesome to be able to have that instead of trying to query multiple sort of disparate data sources for IVC claims. And we've also been able to incorporate as much as possible data from DOD, essentially like the DaVinci data sets. So, you know, the sort of lag on some of these data sets are different. So there's always that to consider when interpreting CAN score. So if someone had an IVC visit, you know, yesterday, it may take a little while for that data to actually make its way into VA to be accessible by CAN. So there's, you know, there's still nuances there related to that. And then lastly, I wanted to just talk about access of the objects here specifically for report developers and tool developers across the VA. So I think this was a big improvement, I think, and we, again, collaborated with CDW project support on this. Hans Nielsen and Phoebe Wong were very instrumental and awesome to work with here. But with sharing the national data sets, we're able to share these now without specific subscriptions, like the DOEX mechanism where a worker would come and ask us for subscription, then we would have to go through a process to approve that access. We really see these CAN data sets as an asset to VA, so we wanted to try to share these in a more streamlined and easy way across the enterprise. So there's CAN underscore reporting underscore shared database that exists on three of the national enclaves. And within those databases, there are objects in the share schema where anyone with national CDW access, with CDW full access data privileges, can query those views. So that should include, you know, ETL accounts as well. So that was a big thing for us. We've also included on SQL 33 in the LSV database objects there that were report developers at a more local level that are using CAN scores and having those sort of embedded queries in their reports. Those are also available. And then coming soon, data will be shared in the cloud and VA's approved cloud. I guess it's called the Summit Data Platform. And then below is kind of just a visual of what those data sets typically look like. So we have a patient identifier. We have a flag, whether or not that veteran was hospitalized at the time of the CAN score computation. Then we have sort of the estimated probability of mortality in 90 days, what that translates into the CAN score. And then the same for the hospitalization model, the hospitalization estimated probability and CAN score. And then also the dates associated with the computation and when those scores are valid. For research access, this is, you know, I'm sure all the researchers know, you have to go through DART, the DART portal, and request access. We have a query out to the Vinci services team to start ingesting the CAN objects. So, you know, I'm sure that's ongoing as we speak, but for researchers, always please go through the DART portal in that typical process. And then lastly, for my part of this presentation, I wanted to touch on this product that we've collaborated on with John Wallace and VSSC that we're calling sort of the CAN Model Performance Monitor. So this is a Power BI dashboard, and there's also a cube component to it where we will be tracking over time how the model is performing. So things like the predictive power area under the curve, like displayed here, we'll have calibration plots. Also, we've talked about incorporating things like the covariate distributions and the outcome distributions. So this will be a resource, you know, available in VA operations. Anyone currently is actually able to query it. It's more of a pilot stage right now for CAN 2.5, but we're working on enhancements for 3.0. And this is just meant to promote that transparency into, okay, how well is this model performing, and promote that aspect of CAN. So from there, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Roslin.
Great. Hi, I'm going to take about 10 minutes to briefly touch on a clinician's point of view in terms of using the CAN score. I'm a VA primary care provider myself. I do research on care for patients with chronic conditions, and that evaluates how we use risk scores to guide care. And I just want to take a moment before I dive in to kind of step back and reflect that, you know, this CanScore update process that Craig and his team have been leading is really an amazing example of what a learning health system can be. You know, Craig and his team are obviously really talented analysts, thoughtful. They could have put their head down and made us a really amazing score that is really predicts with high accuracy what's going to happen to a patient. But they went further than that. You know, they invited clinicians, clinical leaders to check in with them regularly during this whole process to make sure that, you know, the changes they were making met the needs of clinicians, and that they were, you know, doing right by our veterans in terms of making sure the score is transparent and accurate and equitable. So I'm really excited that I was able to kind of witness this and be a part of it. So from a clinical point of view, a lot of people have kind of heard of these CAN scores and other risk prediction scores. They work really well to take our veteran population, like we see on the left, and stratify them in terms of what their risk is, figure out who's at the top of this pyramid. But knowing that someone has a high risk score doesn't tell us why they have a high risk score. And, you know, we've all heard the phrase correlation doesn't mean causation, right? So in this sense, or in this scenario, what that translates to is that the factors that Craig showed us earlier that go into predicting whether someone is going to have a hospitalization aren't necessarily the reasons. And one example of that might be, you know, somebody who has been to the emergency room frequently recently might be at high risk for hospitalization. Does that mean we should try to, you know, tell them don't go to the emergency room? You know, we all kind of have the sense that no, of course not. You know, what it probably means is that something else is going on with them. They were developing pneumonia, they had an injury, and that's, or they had problems maybe accessing other healthcare, and that's the reason that they were showing up in the emergency room. And we need to really figure out what those underlying reasons are to figure out how to lower their risk. Okay. Sorry, I'm having an issue with advancing the slides. There we go. So there have been multiple publications in the literature characterizing the characteristics of people who are CAN. So once you have a high CAN score, looking forward, what medical conditions do people with high CAN scores have? How old are they? What does their health service use look like? This table is a snapshot of a paper that was published by Evelyn Chang and collaborators from the VA Los Angeles. It shows high-risk veterans characterized by high CAN scores on the left, low risk on the right. And as you might expect, you know, high-risk veterans have much more commonly have things like hypertension, diabetes, and if you go down to the bottom, you know, are seen in primary care much more often and do end up in the emergency room much more often. These kind of analyses can give us sort of a snapshot about what this population is dealing with. This data is, you know, from 2016 to 2018. And looking at these kind of big picture snapshots, you know, inevitably means that we're looking at something that is can be out of date pretty quickly. So what can be more relevant to people trying to get a snapshot of what's going on right now in their facility or their patient panel is to use some of these dashboards that directly access CAN scores. So I'm going to give you a very brief overview of a few options. One dashboard that you can use to view your patients or your facility's patients' CAN scores is accessed through the VSSC Primary Care Almanac. And this is a snapshot of just some of the tools that are available on this web portal. There will be a link in the slides. On the left, you can see there are multiple ways to access the CAN score based on your team, or even if you go down to the bottom, a specific patient. If you use the team version, that will be focused on teams of patients that are panels of patients that are assigned to primary care teams. And this is my primary care team on the top, and I, of course, didn't show you the actual patients, but what you can see on the bottom in the blue is the type of information you get if you go into this portal. So you would get your patients on your team, their CAN score, their identifying information, but then some of this clinical information, are they participating in certain programs like telehealth, palliative care, home-based primary care, some of their utilization counts recently, have they been to the emergency room, were they discharged recently? And then on the right, when did they last come to primary care and when are they due to come next, which is always really, it can be really useful. And you can sort the patients by any of those categories. Another really amazing tool that's developed by Craig's group is the patient care assessment system. This tool has its own link. It also, if you are primary care, linked to a primary care team, it also knows, pulls in your panel, but there is access for people who aren't primary care clinicians as well. And that also can be reached either through the CPRS tools menu or through that primary care almanac page. PCAS, and this is, you won't be able to see all these filters. The reason I show you this is because the PCAS can sort your impaneled patients by a lot of different markers of high risk, and CAN score is just one of them. But if you click on CAN scores, you again get this grid of your patients that you can sort by CAN score, and the grid on the very bottom in the gray shows you some of the information that pops up. Here there's some COVID-19 information, some whole health information, some information about when they're coming to the VA. One of the things that PCAS can do when you really drill down to a patient is let you create tasks and a care plan for that patient. That's something really unique, I think, among other tools that can display panels of patients, but don't have that added care planning function. The PCAS, a lot of the PCAS functions have newly been put into a Power BI platform, which can be really convenient in terms of letting you customize. It has two unique features compared to the platform I just showed you. One is on the right, you can really customize how your patients are filtered. So here I did filter down a set of patients by CAN score, but I can also drill down on the upper right to patients that had ED visits, are not meeting some certain quality metrics, or even patients that are coming in to see me in the next 30 days. On the left, the other unique feature of this is, you can limit it to a certain primary care team or not. I could look at my whole facility or a certain set of clinics that I'm interested in. And again, the grid on the bottom shows some of the information that shows up in this version of the platform. Last but not least, all of these platforms I've showed you so far require you to either be logging in and already someone already connected to a primary care team or to enter a certain group of patients. There's one tool that's being developed that will allow you to automatically show the CAN score of a certain patient you're looking at in CPRS. It's called Brilliance. It's being developed by Jay Mavi in Orlando and some clinical collaborators in the VA. And it's only in some visits right now, but I know that they're working hard to get it expanded. If you have Brilliance in your vision, you can start a floating window that will show the patient, the CAN score of any the patient that you have currently pulled up in CPRS. As it shows here, this patient whose name I've hidden has a CAN score of 99, and you can get more details on their actual probability of mortality and hospitalization, like Craig was showing us earlier. So, there's not one right way to use a CAN score or to address care for people who are high risk. There are many different reasons that people could end up being high risk. These are just some case examples of ways that people have in the VA have used these scores before. So some teams use the CAN score to prioritize patients who were recently discharged from the hospital for more intensive post-discharge follow-up than they might traditionally get. So there are some teams in Tennessee, for example, who are taking patients who have high CAN scores recently discharged and calling them every day. Obviously a very intensive intervention, but reserved for those very high-risk patients who might really need it. Another example is that some teams use this score to prioritize patients for more in-depth comprehensive screening for things like the ACORN, social determinants of health tool, or other care needs. Again, things that might be more time intensive and that, you know, we want to get to all patients eventually, but maybe we'll start with the patients that are at high risk. A third example is that some VA facilities have RN care managers who are focused site-wide on coordinating care for all of their patients that are high CAN. And some of those examples are showing a lot of success. And they really focus on making sure care for those patients is coordinated and making sure those patients have a comprehensive care plan. You know, there's a lot of initiatives going on in the VA to try to figure out the best practices for patients who have high CAN scores. And that would be a whole other cyber seminar to go over what we're learning there. A couple of resources I want to point out. The RIVET project, funded by the Office of Primary Care and also led by Evelyn Chang and Elvira Jimenez in Los Angeles, has been collating best practices, and they've put those into a couple of resources. One is a roadmap for managing high-risk veterans that's specifically focused on primary care teams, but there's a lot of good information in this link. And then another resource I put together that can be useful to people, I think, in many settings, is this high-risk tool repository that can be accessed via SharePoint, where you can see different case examples and best practices of approaches teams have used to manage and improve care for the high-risk patients and get tips on how to do those yourself. Last but not least, a lot of us are working on future directions and how we can improve care or improve outcomes for high-risk veterans. One example I'll tell you is a project that I'm leading that uses VA data to take those veterans that we already know are at high risk for hospitalization and automatically divide them into groups that are similar to each other in terms of what chronic conditions they have. And you can probably imagine how that would make it a lot easier to figure out a specific set of interventions for patients who, for example, might be high risk and all have mental health conditions versus patients who are high risk and mostly have cardiac conditions. And we've already built that function into some of the tools that I've showed you. This is that Power BI version of PCAS. And there's a view where, again, you can filter by which of your patients are high risk and then or high CAN score. And then at the bottom, they're automatically sorted into some of these clinical groups that I mentioned. You can click into one of these segments, see your patients that are in that group, and get some suggested interventions that are tailored to the needs of that group. Okay, great. I'll turn it back to Craig for the summary.
Thanks, Dr. Roslin. So yeah, just a couple of quick points to end here. So we did release CAN 3.0 about a month ago at this point. And you know, for developers out there, CAN 2.5 will cease production at the end of this month, actually. So I believe it is September 27th will be the last update for CAN 2.5. And then what's most likely going to happen is sometime around the end of October is when we will start to decommission the DOEX and LSV objects for access to CAN 2.5. So at least by, you know, mid to late October, you need to have updates to your products if you're utilizing these models. You know, and then the highlights for CAN 3.0, we're reducing down to two models, the 90-day mortality and the 90-day hospitalization, and, you know, expanding that cohort to hopefully find all the veterans that are actively using VA care. And then, you know, integrating more veteran data sources as much as possible. The VA EHR, both Oracle Health, Millennium, and VISTA CPRS, the integrated veteran care claims data, and DOD data where we can. We have a lot more additional information on the CAN SharePoint, so it's an internal resource for VA folks in the VA network, so hit that link. We do have a email group for questions under a contact us section. We recommend that you go that route to ask questions. So we have a team of folks able to respond more timely. And eventually some of those questions or the mechanism may change where we have more of a traditional help desk setup. So, you know, we remind you, try to utilize the Canvas SharePoint first and use the mechanisms on that SharePoint to then reach out and contact us. And then, you know, as Dr. Rosalind pointed out, there's more information available for high-risk patients on the Rivet internal page as well. All right, I think that's all we had for today. Are there questions out there?
We do have a few questions. I'm going to start from the top and work our way through. For the audience, if you do have a question, please use that Q&A screen to submit those questions in. First question that we have here, what was the PC cohort in your 3.0 versus 2.5 calibration?
So we didn't display that here, but we're more than happy to produce that. I think actually that was something I was working on this morning that may be part of that monitoring tool moving forward once we get that updated. So that is readily available and accessible moving forward for everyone.
Thank you. Next question here. How much weight percentage does the demographics and the social determinants of health factor into CAN score overall?
I'd have to go back and look specifically at those. I do know for the mortality model, age specifically is very highly predictive of mortality. So that specifically is very high. And something I guess I didn't mention when we were talking about covariates is we've tried to more flexibly model some of our covariates. So previously in 2.5, all of our covariates were binned or they were binaries. So with 3.0, for some of these more continuous variables, we try to keep them in a more, you know, flexible state. So for like age, we are actually using splines to represent age. And some of the other more continuous variables like the MWI, I can't recall if we spline that or if it's represented, its functional form is continuous, but we did try to, you know, be more thoughtful or be thoughtful in how we modeled those. Some of the work that came out of, it was coming out of the CAN bias team, you know, encouraged some of those more flexible ways of representing the variables in the model.
Great, thank you. The next question here. Can the CAN score flow into VISTA or CPRS and created into a patient data object or incorporated into clinical reminder logic, et cetera?
So as part of CAN 3.0, we did early on, we explored trying to get CAN scores into CPRS, into like the vitals package. We've kind of run into roadblocks there, so that's been kind of put off to the side for now. One thing Dr. Rosalind brought up, though, is the Brilliance interface within CPRS. And that's, you know, I don't think it's available quite nationwide yet, but hopefully that'll be flowing out to more users nationwide.
Thank you. The next question here. Congrats to the team. It is gratifying to see the durability of CAN and ongoing improvements. How are you handling hospitalizations outside VA and incorporating community care data?
So thanks, Dr. Fennessy, your question there. So we are in the outcomes, we are including any hospitalization that we know of. For VA, so that includes the in-house and, you know, community care paid for hospitalization claims as, you know, as part of our outcome. So we are including them there, should be pretty well represented since I'm sure the providers want to get paid for their work. And then in terms of input or covariates, we are including both in-house and IVC in that. So most of like the hospitalization data that we're using as sort of utilization type predictors, most of those are binaries, like in the last year, have they had like a mental health type inpatient stay? Have they had a medical or surgical type? And I think the last one is nursing home. So we have binaries there, but those binaries take into account the community care claims data and also the in-house data. One of our variables, like I mentioned, I think during the covariates, we did do like these concepts of like trying to count visit days for utilization. So specifically for hospitalizations, one of the variables is like acute days of care, which essentially is the number of days they were either in a hospital or, you know, at an ER. That's the sort of back end of that. And that definition actually came out of a study that I saw in New York City that was trying to predict acute days of care. So that's kind of, we tried to make sure the way the input variables were defined, they were flexible enough to include all these sources.
Thank you. Dr. Finn sent in an addition while you were responding there, and he's wondering if that includes Medicare.
It does not. So on that slide, I think I have two columns that are all red. So currently we do not have Medicare data. And we do not obviously have like any data outside the VA's purview, which would be, you know, probably paid for by private insurance. So those are two exceptions at this point.
Thank you. The next question here, is there a way to request CAN 3.0 scores for a patient cohort for research purposes, i.e. through DART? And is CAN 3.0 data available for past years, i.e. we would be interested in CAN data between FY17 and FY22?
Yeah, good question. So any sort of research question or request for data needs to go through the DART process or through the Vinci help desk for getting access to data. I'm moving the slides on my screen, but I'm not sure if they're moving for everyone at this point. But this slide is, if you're seeing it, it's the CAN version slide, it's slide 5. This gives a sense of when scores have been computed for each individual algorithm version. So for CAN 3.0, we went back to the beginning of 2023. And the reason we didn't go further is because the training data that we used was from 2022, and we didn't feel it appropriate to try to apply the weights that we derived from 2022 data backwards, especially through the pandemic where things got a little weird. So, yeah.
Thank you. The next question here, how does the CAN report detect that veterans are diagnosed with certain conditions, for example, CHF? Is it triggered if a provider uses the DX code in CPRS, or is it triggered if the DX is listed on the problem list in CPRS?
So, at least in terms of how we incorporate covariates, specifically medical covariates, they have to be a diagnosis code in CPRS. We do not use problem list data in the covariates for CAN. In terms of the different reports out there, I can't say for certain because the only report that the CARD office curates, the tool, I should say, is the PCAS tool. So if you're asking specifically about PCAS, you know, we can set you up to a link to their help desk and ask specifically. But some of the other dashboards that Dr. Rosalind was showing, those are curated by one of our partner offices in VSSC. So anything probably related to the reporting around CAN, they should probably be more directed towards the teams that are developing those reports. We sort of own and maintain the algorithm itself, but there's other teams out there that, you know, do a lot of reporting. There's a lot of homegrown reporting around CAN specifically.
And I'll just agree with that and say that, you know, when it comes to figuring out what predicts hospitalization, you're just going to, you know, use whatever data best does that. when it comes to dashboards for clinical use like PCAS, what I've seen is, you know, a very strict standard in terms of a patient having multiple encounters with a diagnosis, you know, and using other data to be more certain that someone has a diagnosis if you're going to use that information for clinical care. So that's kind of another good example of, you know, we want to look at what information that we can rely on clinically about that patient going forward instead of just using, you know, what was needed to calculate the CAN score.
Great, thank you. And we are back at the top of the hour, so I think we're going to wrap things up at this point. We do have a few pending questions here. I will get those sent over to our presenters. I just want to check with our presenters if either of you have any closing remarks you would like to make.
Just thanks for everyone from my perspective for listening. I think this is the first cyber seminar we've given on CAN. I think maybe Dr. Finn and Dr. Box gave one back in 2017. So hopefully this will provide, you know, a good update on where things stand. Thanks for listening.
Fantastic. Thank you to our presenters so much for preparing and presenting today. We really do appreciate it. For our audience, when I close the meeting out, you will be prompted with a feedback form. We would appreciate if you took a few moments to fill that out. Thank you everyone for joining us for today's HSR Cyber Seminar, and we hope to see you at a future session. Have a great afternoon, everyone.